Welcome back to Canucks Talk here on Sportsnet 650. Jamie Dodd and Thomas Drantz. We are live from the Kintec studio. 650. 650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line. The Bridge Street Dunbar Lumber and Ladner has moved to Progress Way in Tilbury's Industrial Park. More room, more product, more awesome. Details at dunbarlumber.com. Alison Lucan going to join us here momentarily. The Canucks heading down to Seattle to play another preseason game. And it is our pleasure to welcome back to the show for the first time of the new season one of our favorites. She is Alison Lucan. Alison, thank you so much. How are you?
Well, I'm so good now that I'm talking to some of my favorites. How are you guys?
We're doing great. Happy to be talking hockey. Drantz is actually, it's been unnerving this week. Drantz has been like the happiest I've ever seen him in a work environment all week. And it's making me a little nervous.
That's no thanks to you. No, I'm not burned out yet. It's the first week of the season. So now I'm in everything is butterflies and roses. Allison, who are we seeing play for the Kraken tonight? We didn't really see any of sort of the right Beniers tier of guys I'm most interested in watching when they rolled through Vancouver on Tuesday. Who will they have in the lineup tonight when they host the Canucks?
Yeah. So for people who are following along, this will be the first preseason game for Chandler Stephenson, who was supposed to come up on Tuesday, but did not. There was a change in the lineup there, but if you look at some of the younger players, you are going to see Shane Wright. Yanni Newman is going to be in there. This is not necessarily a player I think the Kraken expect to be on the NHL roster right away, but is an intriguing player with a big, big, big shot. Ryan Winterton's going to be there. Ben Myers, the lone goal scorer on Tuesday, is going to be in. And then on the back end, Brandon Montour and Jamie Oleksiak again, as well as Adam Larson and the young Ryker Evans rounding out the top four for Seattle.
My guy, Ryker Evans, but no Will Borgen. So they're well, you got one of my guys.
You got to see Will Borgen on Tuesday here.
That's true.
You mentioned Chandler Stephenson, Allison, getting his first preseason action. Of course, one of the two big free agent acquisitions for Seattle in the summer. And, you know, I know that contract maybe left some people scratching their heads or a little concerned about the risk there for Seattle. How do you expect Seattle to use Stephenson? What role do you think they're going to put him in to try to make sure, you know, at least at the beginning of that contract, they get value out of it?
Yeah, you know, I think it's a really smart ad, and the early lineups have him with Jaden Schwartz and Oliver Bjorkstrand, and Chandler and Schwartz know each other from their younger hockey days, so there's a little bit of a connection personally there. And for me, you know, I think Stephenson is the player that doesn't just contribute in terms of what he can do alone on the ice, but he gives Beniers some breathing room, right? You know, this is when this team was clicking 2 years ago, there really wasn't a very clear, well, there wasn't a clear any line really, except maybe that fourth line. But having two top lines, you can kind of interchange a little bit more. Maybe Beniers isn't always going up against that top competition. He's going to need to refine his footing. So I think particularly for Beniers' development and hopefully return to form, that's going to be another or maybe unheralded big piece of Stephenson's contributions.
Allison, with Wright playing tonight, I'm just curious, like, wasn't quite point per game in the regular season, but had a really strong performance sort of late in the year at the NHL level for Seattle, and then obviously was excellent as the Coachella Thunderbirds made another run to the Calder Cup final. What should our reasonable expectations be for Wright going into, you know, his draft plus three?
Yeah, you know, I think this is a player where, you know, what might have surrounded him before was meeting the moment, right? Mm. And he was thrust into so many spotlights early. And what I saw from this player, as you just said, both late in the NHL season and then in the AHL playoffs and in all of the season in the AHL, honestly, is a player who's ready for the moment now. And I think just like we talked about Stephenson and Beniers, if you look at kind of a penciled in version of center ice for the Kraken, your next two centers are Yanni Gord and Shane Wright. So a similar conversation might be able to be had there, right? In that if it's a night where maybe Shane needs to take a little bit less a bite of the pie, then Yanni Gord is your third line center. And maybe there's a night when Shane Wright is your third line center. And I think, again, that hopefully that kind of a rotation lets him now fully own an NHL moment. And if the Kraken can get a return to form to some depth along with the wingers, then there might be nights where Shane is even eating more of the time that's available. So I think this is a year people are expecting him to be on the NHL roster. He looks comfortable. He looks ready. And having that flexibility for him to move up and down the utilization as the game and as the player presents.
You know, I think so much focus for the Kraken this year is going to be on Shane Wright and Matty Beniers, right? The two young centers. And, you know, it's so easy to forecast them as kind of foundational pieces for that franchise for years to come. And with Beniers specifically, right, as you said, go back to a couple years ago, man, he looked poised to become one of the best young centers in the NHL and really have that breakout. And obviously he didn't have a great season last year. What are the keys for Beniers this year to kind of getting back to that trajectory where he looks to be one of the ascending stars in the NHL?
Yeah, I think, you know, a lot of what is required is work that he's already put in this summer. You know, he comes in with a lot, not too much, right, but more weight packed onto his frame. He looks strong. He looks solid to me. And I think just continuing to care for that body as a pro. I mean, it's such a cliche we say it, but if you've been around these athletes, you know that it's above and beyond eating when you're hungry. You have to give your body fuel. You have to maintain. You have to get rest when you can. And I think that Calder Trophy summer was just so crazy. And that first full season, it didn't come easy, right? But it was a fun experience for him. Mm-hmm. Now he's turning his passion also into his job. I think that this is a player who has the stress of a looming contract off his mind. He told us he hates the business side of things. So I think that might have been more of this than we may have even thought. And again, that protection from Stevenson is going to help him rediscover his comfort and maybe match up appropriately night to night so he can get back to his fullest skill set.
Allison, when you think about this upcoming Kraken season, to me anyway, it just feels like it hinges on Beniers and the bounce back from a tough sophomore campaign. Is that fair? And what have you seen so far in training camp from Seattle's newly extended star center?
Yeah, you know, I think that's an easy narrative. For me, actually, it's going to hinge a little bit more on how this back end plays. And I know that might seem counterintuitive, but defense was always solid for this team. That's going to need to continue. But one of the biggest impacts to what this team could do offensively was when Vince Dunn was out of the lineup. He's such a big piece of getting that puck north, getting it up the ice, and then joining in the play offensively. And I think the forwards are obviously going to be doing some different things, maybe have some more freedom. But if that back end can't be the engine of getting to loose pucks, getting them out of the zone with intentionality and success, and obviously Brandon Montour contributes to that hopefully as well, that for me is going to be the key, is that full health and that ability to execute like they have from the back end. Because that, when that is working, so much else works in front of them in the forward group.
So one of the other big storylines, of course, Allison, for the Kraken this year is new head coach Dan Bylsma, after doing some great work with their AHL team, gets the job with the big team, the Seattle Kraken. And just, again, early here through training camp, you know, a few games in the preseason, what's your sense of what Dan Bylsma wants to do differently? What he wants to tweak about this Seattle Kraken team?
Yeah, you know, he's definitely bringing a different vibe, a different energy. This is a coach who, you know, is all about bringing a high energy positivity to the ice and to when he's around. And he has been open about talking what he wants. He wants fast play. He wants tenacious play. And he wants more offensive production, which anyone could have seen as the ask after last year. And so I think that, you know, that's part of why, for me, that back end that I just talked about is so critical, is that's where it's going to have to start. We talk about this all the time. The pass is faster than the skate, right? So we're looking at what he's going to try and change in terms of his breakout. And then watching these players adapt to the new systems. You know, what we saw three nights ago in Vancouver was a little bit more cleaned up, but the first game against Calgary was a little bit more disjointed than anyone wanted. And Dan said that as much after the game. So watching these players adapt to some of these new systems and then hopefully bring that speed energy and offensive production is going to be are his goals, and it's going to be what this team has to figure out here before the preseason is done.
Allison, I'm sorry, I want to come back to Wright. Or sorry, I want to come back to Beniers.
Okay.
I want to come back to Beniers.
We can.
I loved that contract. Like, I loved that deal for them low after a tough second season. But, you know, like, I've been talking about this a lot. Last year, 16 players had 90 points. Only two of them played for non-playoff teams. Like, I feel like we've entered this world where more than at any point since maybe the late 80s, early 90s, having the elite players is decisive in sort of shaping outcomes. And I sort of look at this Kraken team, and if it's not Beniers, where does that come from, right? Like, in terms of that big picture, what happened last year in your view from a hockey perspective? How does he get back to the swashbuckling two-way, you know, dominator we saw as when he was a rookie?
Yeah, you know, and again, I mentioned kind of, you know, the caring for the body and the fuel. That's going to be a big part of it for me. I think we've all seen players tired. This is not a knock on Beniers specifically, but I think there were some nights when the demand of the workload got to him a little bit. And I think we talk about a player who does have to be responsible for producing some points. He had some pretty long streaks where he didn't get on the score sheet, and then you're gripping your stick even more tightly. You're a little more second guessing before you take that shot because they haven't been going in, right? So again, that's why I think his deployment potentially changing a little bit can help, in that he's not necessarily going up against the McDavid line because he's the top center now kind of situation. And so maybe he's having better scoring chances. If you look at his underlying numbers, it is curious. His defensive work didn't fall off that much last year. And in fact, his faceoff win percentage went up almost 10%, both at 5-on-5 and on the power play. So some things were working better. He's just got to be in a better position to keep and maintain that scoring confidence. I think the two-way play was there and can be boosted with some more physicality from him.
Allison, I want to ask you about a former member of the Seattle Kraken who's now with the Canucks, and that's Daniel Sprong. And, you know, I don't know if you saw on social media the goal he scored in their game in Abbotsford
week,
but it was a pretty impressive one, and it got, trust me, it generated a lot of buzz here among fans about what Sprong could potentially bring to this team. And, you know, he's such a fascinating player, right? Because you see the skill, the shot, the offensive capability, and then you also see that he has bounced around the league a lot. He had his career year, really his breakout season with the Seattle Kraken a couple of seasons ago. What made him click like that in Seattle and have the type of year he did for them?
Yeah, and it goes back to that stereotypical depth. The Kraken were so strong in all four lines that what that meant was that when Sprong was put out there, it wasn't necessarily a line match situation in the terms that the opponent could dominate what was really the fourth line that Daniel Sprong was on. So they could deploy him in limited minutes. They could take advantage of some matchups, even on the road, because that depth kind of negated some of that advantage, in my opinion. And then he could just go down and score, and he could be put out on the power play and just score. When the team wasn't as level around him, his minutes would shrink and then his production would shrink. So that's why I think it worked, is that his minutes were still smaller, but he could be put out very specifically and opportunistically to get on the score sheet with the shot that he has.
And is it as simple as that as to, you know, why, considering his numbers over the last couple of years, he has been hard pressed to find a permanent home? You know, as you're describing it, that's a fairly complicated process, and the situation kind of has to be just right to get the most out of him. Is that why, do you think, kind of the care that the team needs to take in his usage, why it's been a struggle for him to find a permanent landing spot?
Yeah, I think it is. I think because, you know, again, and everyone's talked about this. You guys have, you know, I know the guys in the morning talk about it as well. It's the defensive lapses that give coaches pause. And that goes back to how he has to be used. And then what Sprong has done for himself, unfortunately, is that with his production, is that even to qualify this guy or extend this guy or risk going to an arbitration situation, or even just the basic math and escalators based on what he's done, demand the dollar amount that most teams aren't willing to pay for a player who does what he does in the way that he does it. And so that's why I think he keeps bouncing, is that for the money that he's going to ultimately want to stick around, theoretically, the whole picture isn't there enough historically for organizations to justify that.
Allison, for Canucks fans who obviously are not following the Kraken with a fine tooth comb, right? What is the player in the lineup tonight who has the most to compete for from a opportunity and or job at the back end of the 23-man roster perspective?
Good question. I'm going to pick two. Going to take two on this.
Please.
The first is a forward, Ryan Winterton. So This was the buddy to Shane Wright on both of their call-ups last year, and he really impressed at the NHL level. And so I think this is a player who's starting to get into that window of, can you push your way out of the AHL, and not just push your way out of the AHL, but do it enough that you're going to command enough time to make it worth it, right? Like, I don't know that this is a player they want to bring up just to be number 13 for the group. So what can he do? And then similarly on the back end, you know, I'm watching Josh Mahura, a player signed in the offseason league minimum. I had kind of penciled him in to be the seventh defender. Maybe not his best outing versus Calgary in the first preseason game, but again, that was a messy one for a lot of people. So can he do enough to say, I deserve to be on this NHL roster, or is he going to end up bouncing back and forth between the two leagues as the season starts?
Or is he going to end up on waivers and back on Radko Gudas' left side in Anaheim? You know, the Ducks can't turn that down. Got to play the Mahura-Gudas pair if you get a chance.
Can't go away from that one. Allison,
things only I believe, by the way.
Before we let you go, we always like to get your kind of overall perspective on the Pacific Division. So
tiers?
You can do tiers.
Throw
you can
tiers.
Just do a big picture view, whatever. But like, how do you see the pecking order in the Pacific Division
tiers,
this year?
Tiers.
Well, you know what's funny is I was actually up there on Tuesday and we did do tiers
at
one of our intermissions. So there you go.
There you go.
Tiers on TV.
Tiers on TV.
Wow.
Tiers.
I love it so much.
I do have, you know, my tiers even have names, guys.
Oh,
ready for that?
Let's go.
Amazing.
Tier one are the contenders, and that's Edmonton, Vancouver, and Vegas. Of course,
all right.
You all know we've talked about the Vancouver questions, and I'm curious to see Lankinen tonight, right? That's going to be interesting. Middle ground is where I'm actually slotting Seattle, LA, and Calgary, although that Doughty injury is curious as I'll get out now. We'll see. And then third tier are the builders, and that's Anaheim and San Jose.
That's a very polite way to refer to Anaheim and San Jose. That's a very tactful tier name for them, Allison. By the way, are we going to get a chippy one in Seattle tonight? That was an unexpectedly heated preseason affair in Rogers Arena earlier this week.
It was, and I was kind of surprised. I heard that Tockett did say it was a rivalry postgame. Is that true?
Did Tockett say that? Or was he more talking like it could be a rival? I'd have to go back and check.
Marketing genius, yeah. Rick Tockett.
Well, I think that, you know, it was chippy. And I think, you know, for me, if you're the Kraken and looking to build on all that stuff we just talked about in camp with new systems, you don't want it as chippy, because I didn't like the number of penalties, regardless of whether they were the physical. I mean, too many men. I mean, it's a great name for a podcast, but it's not a good call in a hockey game for your side. So, you know, I think that they want to have a little more discipline on the Kraken side. And, you know, Dan, when he was asked about it, he wants to see the energy. He wants to see the tenacity, but he wants to see it in terms of that is the Kraken's identity, not in terms of just trying to be out there, you know, pushing and hitting and grinding for the sake of being frustrated. So I think we should expect pace. I think we should expect intensity and tenacity. But I don't think that either, well, I don't know about Tockett, but I don't think that that's necessarily what the Kraken are asking for or want to see. They'd like to see a little more connectedness and control of the gameplay from the Kraken side.
The Canucks are sending Tyler Myers, though, Allison, so you never know.
Oh, I saw.
With him in the mix in a Kraken-Canucks game, you never know what might happen. Allison, really appreciate it. Great to have you back on the show after the summer. Enjoy the game tonight. I'm sure we'll talk again soon.
Looking forward to it, my friends. Take care.
Thank you. That is Seattle Kraken analyst.
She had her tears
Allison
ready.
Lucan. She had her tears
and
ready and
scared.
Named.
And you were scared. You're like,
scared.
You're like, oh,
I just
don't want to throw tears at her.
No, no, no. I didn't say that. Yeah. I just don't want to force them to do it in tier format.
Why?
I don't know. I respect Allison too much.
You don't want to. You don't want to do the thing we literally always do. I feel like
that's
that's like Dreisaitl going over to McDavid one day and being like, "Hey, you know those like sick give and goes we do? Like, let's not."
That's you're right.
I actually
you're right.
That
us asking guests for tears is the equivalent of
it's our
McDavid feeding Dreisaitl.
I'm not saying it's as cool because it's not, which is why we don't make Dreisaitl McDavid money.
It is
maybe.
Definitely not as cool,
but it's still our thing.
It's a living. It's not much, but it's a living.
Yeah, it's a shtick anyway.
I do love that she's just like, the builders, the nicest way you could say the teams that are going to be bad this year.
Yeah, I mean, and Calgary, right? Like, she was right to put them in there.
No, she had them in the middle.
Oh,
she did. She had them with LA and Seattle in the middle.
Okay, that's unfortunate. I missed that.
I just, I still think there's more established NHL talent on Calgary than Anaheim and San Jose. Like, I don't think Calgary are going to be in the first overall lottery mix.
Sell low. Smash that under, baby.
That's fair.
Yeah.
There, I see the downside, especially with the goaltending and the defense.
And the older players who want to leave.
Yes, that's the potential sell-off at the deadline for sure. And
Come
then
on.
You get into the death slog at the end. And yeah, then things can really go south. 650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line. You can continue to get your thoughts in, as mentioned.
You know what? You know what? Sorry, really quick. And before Arash plays us off here. Do you remember those Canucks seasons where they were like bad? And then you'd enter the season and it would be like, the Canucks are a game over 500 in mid-November. And then Alex Edler would get hurt for a month. And then on the other side of it, it was like, the Canucks are 5 points out of the basement. That's what the Calgary Flames season is going to look like. It's going to be one of those.
So they're going to have a key injury or two key injuries.
Because they're relying too much on older players and they don't have a ton of quality experience and depth behind them. So it's going to be like the same thing. It's like, they'll be frisky when their lineup is intact, but their lineup's not going to be intact because they're too old and too shallow.
Yeah, that's fair.
They're that type of bad team.
Okay, speaking of tears and your love for them, you had a piece of The Athletic today that involved tears.
I did.
Kind of.
What do you mean? It had tears?
It had tears. But it also was talking about something we touched on briefly on the show yesterday.
Yeah, we'll get into it.
About players on the Canucks potentially primed to break out. And again, some of it we touched on a little bit yesterday, but I think there's some interesting individual conversations about Canucks players to be had, but also some kind of big picture takeaways about the Canucks team as a whole and where their season might be going. So we'll get into that on the other side, though. Again, we'll keep you updated about any further lineup or roster news from the Canucks today. You can text in 650-650. More Canucks talk coming up here on Sportsnet 650.
Hey, it's Mike Halford
and Jason Brough.
Join us for Halford and Brough in the Morning weekdays from 6 to 9 a.m. on Sportsnet 650.
Or on demand anytime through your favorite podcast app.
Welcome back to Canucks Talk here on Sportsnet 650. Jamie Dodd and Thomas Drance. Final hour of the show for the week. Canucks Talk brought to you by Avenue Machinery and Douglas Lake Equipment. Be a champion on the worksite. Find them together online at dleamc.com. We are live from the Kintec studio. Kintec, Canada's favorite orthotics provider, powered by thousands of five-star Google reviews. Sore feet? What are you waiting for? 650. 650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line. Just before we get to your latest piece at The Athletic, Drancer, as we were chatting with Allison Lucan in our last segment, the LA Kings announcing that Drew Doughty will undergo surgery to repair a fractured ankle and is listed as month to month. So a potential long-term absence for Drew Doughty there. And as Allison mentioned, you know, already a Kings team that I don't think a lot of people were super high on coming into this season. And Doughty, even at his age, plays a major, major role on that blue line. So that's a tough one potentially for them to weather.
A huge loss, obviously, for the LA Kings. But I do want to note, like, the upside case for the Kings required what?
Brant Clark.
Mm-hmm. Right? So it's like, on the one hand, their playoff odds take a big hit without Doughty. But on the other, it does open up a ton of opportunity for Brant Clark to actualize potentially as an impact player in this league, right? Power play one's freed up, some of that stuff. So it's like, is there a possibility coming out of this that maybe they're not as good in October? In fact, for sure, they're not going to be as good in October, November, maybe December and January. As we thought they were, and you know, we were low on them, right? We were thinking they were a 95-point team, probably further away from the Canucks than the Canucks are from the Oilers, for example, right? That's sort of been my analysis. But could the opportunity that this opens up for Brant Clark make them stronger when Doughty comes back in the spring? That I think that's a real factor here to at least weigh and monitor or watch as this season gets going.
That's the latest on Drew Doughty. Again, surgery to repair a fractured ankle. He is out month to month.
Sucks.
That's tough.
Hate it.
Yeah, it's a bummer. Okay, as mentioned, your latest piece up at The Athletic on the Canucks, looking at potential breakout players. And again, we talked just a little bit about this yesterday on the show, and one of the points we were making is, you know, when people hear breakout, I think they tend to think like Nils Höglander scoring 24 goals last year, right? But there's other ways to have a breakout type of campaign. We talked a little bit about Quinn Hughes. Can he go from consensus second best defenseman in the NHL to challenging Cale Makar for the first best defenseman? Or the, you just call that best, actually, usually not first best. The best defenseman in the NHL over the course of this season, what the path to that would look like. That's another type of breakout. And one of the players featured in your piece, again, that people can go check out at The Athletic right now, is JT Miller. And you start talking about a breakout campaign for JT Miller, and you look at it and say, well, one, this guy's 31. His last 3 years of point production, 103, 82, 99, and it starts to become pretty difficult to imagine what a breakout might look like. But you have the likelihood of a JT Miller breakout at 6 out of 10. So more likely than not, per your judgment. And I think the reasoning is actually really interesting, right? Because your point is essentially that the thing that was most impressive about JT Miller's campaign wasn't that he finally broke the 100 barrier mark last year, right? Because we saw him get to 99. It was the fact that he did it while also being an extremely effective two-way center for really the first extended time, the first full season since he's been in Vancouver. And your point in the piece is, if he repeats that, and he only, quote unquote, only has 85 points, right? Because he doesn't get the shooting luck and just, you know, the power play maybe doesn't click at certain points or whatever it is. Well, that kind of almost still qualifies as a breakout for JT Miller.
Yeah, I mean, the way I'd sort of look at it from a scoring perspective, right, is like he went from 31 to 48 5-on-5 points year over year, right? Now, one season he had woeful puck luck. The other season, he had the best puck luck in the league by combined save percentage and shooting percentage, right? Now, there's a possibility that JT Miller, who's an incredibly cerebral player, right, who dines out on knowing how to attack goaltenders, you know, plays a thinking man's game, watches a ton of video, has sort of worked at his craft. Like, he's not an outlier for no reason now, right? Like, we don't see players typically, we saw it with the Twins, but we don't see it frequently where players become like their best, the best version of themselves offensively at the age of 28. You know, like, that's pretty rare. It's especially rare for like a winger to transition to center in their late 20s and then level up suddenly as a two-way piece at the age of 30. But once you're an outlier, right, once you're an outlier, we can't view you responsibly as analysts the way that we view most players, right? Like, JT Miller has already defied what anyone would could or should reasonably expect from players in their late 20s and early 30s, both from a point production and from a defensive standpoint. That said, we've seen players have one-off campaigns where they become stud defensive players. With Miller, I think we can put a little more confidence on suggesting that he'll sustain some of this, given that really his form flipped the moment Tockett was hired.
Yeah, that's a good point. It's not like an 82
it's not
game
82.
Sample, as you say in the piece,
yeah,
right?
It's the 36 games that he played under Tockett, and it's the playoffs. So, like, we're talking more like 130, 140 game sample here, which gives us more confidence. Like, that matters. That's, you know, it's not 3,000 minutes, but it's 1,500 to 2,000 minutes. I mean, that's a relatively significant sample. If he can maintain that again this year, even if, like, let's split the difference between his 5-on-5 scoring year over year, even if it's 40 5-on-5 points as opposed to 48, right? It's 15 5-on-5 goals as opposed to 20, right? He settles in at somewhere between 80 and 87 points as opposed to 95 to 105, right?
Mm-hmm.
If he does that, the defensive stuff sustains and the production, you know, hits, like, even if it's at the lower baseline, man, that is a heck of a player. That's
yes.
an elite contributor. And that's what I think matters here, right? Like, you can have a hugely successful season if you're JT Miller. You can significantly up your stock around the league. Maybe not in this market. This market kind of knows what he is. But around the league, or at least this market believes that he's this player already, right? I don't think he has to prove it to Canucks fans. But around the league, I still think there's, you know, some lagging indicators. If he does both of those things, though, I think, you know, you're talking about a top 10 center. You're talking about an elite contributor. And that's where I do still think this matters, especially given, and I've gone over this before, but like 1920, when Miller first came and played with the Lotto line, right? He was one of the 15 best forwards in the league. Like, he was an elite contributor for the Canucks that season and a major reason why they exceeded expectations the way they did both before the pandemic and in the bubble. The next year, though, that sort of pandemic-shortened bubble season where he missed the first few games because he was COVID positive and on, he had 23 5-on-5 points across 53 games. Like, he was not an elite contributor that season. He played center. Remember, after Pettersson went out, it didn't go great. Like, Brock Besser was easily Vancouver's best forward. He was more like a really good second-line or low-end first-line level contributor that season. Not still a great player, just not an elite contributor. Well, the next season's the Bruce There It Is season. He was an elite contributor, had 99 points.
Yep.
You know, his two-way game wasn't fully fleshed out at center that year, but also the team's defensive game was such a mess that I don't know how much of it was him and how much of it was team effects.
Yep.
But nonetheless, his production was so significant that he was an elite contributor. And then you get to the first season after he signed his extension, where he was being widely criticized for a variety of, you know, on-ice body language stuff and on down the list. Well, he had 31 5-on-5 points that season, and his defensive game was, you know, not great. Like, again, team effects rule here, but the Canucks were outscored by 14 with him on the ice that year. He wasn't an elite contributor. He was a good first line player, still hit 80 points, but he wasn't an elite contributor. Last year, there's no question he was an elite contributor.
A very elite contributor, yeah.
So at some point, though, I do think it's worth at least noting, right, that, like, putting in another season of elite contribution, which, again, doesn't require 100 points, but it does require point per game plus and the high-end defensive game that he showed last year, would represent the first time that he's given this club back-to-back seasons as an elite contributor, right? Like, that's something that he's yet to accomplish and something that does matter, right? Like, doing it year after year, being that reliable guy, I mean, that's essential, and that's something we're still waiting to see from him. So I do think that would represent something of another breakout for Miller.
And I think just that concept of, because I think, you know, to me, that's emblematic of how I view the team as a whole, right? Because I think there's going to be a lot of focus from fans and media this year for the Canucks on, can individual X repeat the performance he put in last year, right? Can Brock Besser score 40 goals again? Can Miller hit 100 points? Hughes, 90 points, right? Even go down the list to a guy like Hoglander. Like, hey, he scored 24 goals. Can he live up to that again? And for me, I mean, look, it's fair to wonder how all those players are going to perform. But the more important thing is not so much can all of those guys match their individual points. The more important thing is the underlying process, right? And I think that's what you're getting at with JT Miller is, hey, maybe some of those pucks aren't going to go in. But if he repeats what he was doing in terms of controlling play, in terms of his ability as a defensive center, then it doesn't really matter if he drops from 102 points to 85 points. That's still a really elite player. And I think the other thing for me, and in you know where I hesitate with the focus on can they match what they did offensively last year, is we saw how their offense dried up in the playoffs, right? You know, the goals just weren't bouncing in the way they were in November and December and October for that team last year. So they might score fewer goals in the regular season as a team next year, while at the same time, their offensive generation from a process standpoint looks a lot better. And part of the way I'm viewing this team this year is just my focus is on how do they look come playoff time? How do they look in April and May? If Besser has 32 goals and Miller has 85 points and, you know, Hughes declines a little bit, but their offensive product, their generation of chances was stronger than last year, then that's a good trade, right? Like, that is what matters more than anything else. More than the final tally for individual guys, it's what does the process look like going into the playoffs?
Right, and how does the team perform, right? And that's, I think, a real thread that runs throughout that article in The Athletic, where it's like, the Quinn Hughes breakout doesn't require another 90-point season. It doesn't require 100-point season. Mm-hmm. It doesn't require 20 goals, right? 86 points, and he plays his best games when the stage is biggest, right? Whether it's at the Four Nations or in the Stanley Cup playoffs, because that remains the difference, the trump card that you're going to bump into anytime you're talking Quinn Hughes versus Cale Makar, right?
Yep.
Like, Quinn Hughes versus Cale Makar, you're going to run into a couple trump cards. One, what Makar can do physically as a you know physical defender and as a shooter, and two, Cale Makar has won a Conn Smythe, right? Like, he's got the cup, he's got the rings, and he's got the hardware, and that's you know Hughes needs to look, maybe doesn't need to win a cup this year and win the Conn Smythe, but certainly he needs to be at the same level in the postseason that he was in the regular season last year, and I think it's fair to say that he wasn't. Right? Like, it was his sort of first real time getting a taste of that playoffs. He still had 10 points in 13 games. Mm-hmm. Didn't score a goal, though. And, you know, he certainly was still excellent. But, you know, there's that next level, the big game player level, that once you get to the very top of the mountain, you know, once you get to the Hillary Step, right, there's still that last bit to summit.
Mm-hmm.
Hughes is an incredibly rarefied air. But that next layer, that next level up, requires this team to sustain their performance and then Hughes to be a big driver in sort of putting them over the top in on the big stage. That's the next step for him from a public perception of, you know, the best defenders in the world perspective, as opposed to repeating as a 90-point guy.
Yeah. And the other point I would make about kind of the process and the idea of regression for individual Canucks players is we've kind of already seen it. Like, that was the second half of last year, right? They didn't score. You know, Besser's goal scoring dropped off. Obviously, we know what happened to Elias Pettersson.
So
the power play dropped off.
I see what you're saying.
Like, the team as a whole. And then into the playoffs, we saw how it looked, right? So, like, we kind of already have seen that regression.
So I see what you're saying. And I think you've got a point. To a point. Right? But the fact is that it's not like they ran into bad luck.
Sure.
They just ran into not outrageous efficiency, you know, in every phase of the game. Like, that's all it was. It wasn't.
But even then, it's like, okay, we've seen what it looks like with relatively normal luck.
Right.
You know what I mean?
For sure.
And so we should almost have that kind of version of the team baked in already. And, like, I think I'm just a little concerned that there's going to be this rash of panic if they're not, like, leading the league in goals scored in November the way they were last year. It's like, oh my gosh, everyone's going cold. It's like, no, this was built in. And this is leading the league in goals scored in November is actually not what matters at all. What matters is, can you build an attack and a team that's going to be dangerous in the playoffs in the way that the team last year wasn't, right? Like, mm-hmm. That's what matters. And you could have a better offensive process, not get the breaks, score fewer goals, but be more dangerous offensively in the playoffs this year than you were last year. Like, that's an entirely feasible thing for this team to do.
Yeah. Yeah. And look, the volume, upping the volume at which this team is able to manufacture chances is just everything. Like, mm-hmm. it just is. You can't generate shots at even strength like you're the Arizona Coyotes or the Minnesota Wild or the Detroit Red Wings or the Montreal Canadiens or the Seattle Kraken and hang with the best in the league when the chips are down late. And look, we saw it. We saw it. Against that Edmonton Oilers team that got the worst goaltending that any team has ever got from a club that won a series. Like, we've literally never seen a team have that shaky goaltending and advance mm-hmm. in the Stanley Cup. Not once ever. So it's like, even with Vancouver's shooting efficiency, which continued in the playoffs, their inability to generate cost them, yeah. right? That to me is far more important. Like, this team could have below average offensive results, but if they're generating 30 shots an hour, right? If they're generating 32 scoring chances, that's going to matter a lot more yep. to me 30 games into the season than, you know, another October, November hockey run of, you know, Harlem Globetrotters like dominance in which they're putting up a million goals, but the substance behind it is lacking.
Tyler texts in, I think fans need to prepare themselves for some players to have fewer points, while at the same time, the team goals may be higher if the production is spread around nicely. And I will say one thing that where you really saw the drop-off, right? Because, like, Ilya Mikheyev had, what, 10 goals before Christmas or something yep. like that? Sam Lafferty obviously was scoring a bunch, and then some of that depth scoring from January on really just fell off the map. Obviously, with Ilya Mikheyev, we all know the story, right? So, I mean, I do think that's part of having a more dangerous attack. Obviously, your best players have to be really good in the playoffs, but the depth scoring fell off a cliff as well in the second part of the season.
Yeah, although the Garland, Dakota Joshua line, Bluger line caught fire and carried them.
But then it became, in the playoffs, it became not depth scoring. It became like front line scoring for them. You know what I mean? Joshua and Garland.
For sure. Yeah, you're fair enough. They worked their way up the lineup. But,
yeah.
But there was that stretch in January and December where they were absolutely on fire. Point per game for like 30 games.
Yeah, it was outrageous.
I mean, they honestly, you know, hit a lot of issues as this team padded their lead atop the Pacific Division. It was essential. So they ended up being a key engine for this team last year.
The other thing I'll just say, sorry, quickly, please. Is the Canucks scored 279 goals as a team last year. Okay, mm-hmm. Now that's not the, right, there's empty netters and things in there and yada, yada, yada. But the Florida Panthers, the team that won the Cup, they scored 268, right? So, like, the Canucks might just score fewer goals this year. And that's not the end of their quest to be a Stanley Cup contender. Now, obviously, there's only so far you can decline. You have to have a potent offense to go win the Stanley Cup. But I guess even just in that very basic metric, there's room for a little bit of production decline. And to me, that's not as much of a concern if the underlying process looks better, right? Like, again, I'm not saying like, oh, who cares if they don't score that much? You need to score. You need to be able to score. But they were so on fire last year that they can afford in that way to decline just a little bit and still be a dangerous team.
No doubt. So sorry, 288 goals.
They had, no, they had 279. Per NHL.com.
Right, 279, okay.
Yeah, and my point was just like the Florida Panthers had 268. They won the Stanley Cup.
Yes. Yeah, but, and here's the key though, right? The Florida Panthers generated 450 more shots.
Yes. So that's my
point. To score less.
That's my point. Right? But like, if the Canucks have closer to that profile, but the actual goals goes down, it's like, that's a great trade.
Yeah.
That's a fantastic trade. That's exactly what you want.
Yeah, it's you know, only the Detroit Red Wings among teams that scored 275 or more had fewer than 2,500 shots. And the Canucks had fewer than 2,500 shots by 150, right? By like a big. So,
mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean, and this is where I actually think it's important if you're trying to see this team clearly and trying to like weight your expectations with some precision, right? Like, I think the base rate, fat part of the bell curve take on where our expectations for this Canucks team should be going into the season. I actually think it's this. I actually think it's that the team is as good or maybe better. Okay. I think they have a real credible shot at being better, but I think on paper they should be as good
mm-hmm.
without necessarily getting results that are as good.
For sure.
That to me is like the thing we got to wrap our brains around. Like, it's hard to win 50 games. It's hard to get 109 points. It's hard to repeat as a team that's that successful. This Canucks team could get 10 fewer points and be a more formidable opponent in April than they were last season. Like, that is a realistic outcome. And in fact, I'd say that's the most probable outcome. That's like what I'm most expecting out of this team. I am most expecting out of this team regression to hit and the results to be somewhat softer than the sparkling, hey, no team's ever had a goal differential this good through 40 games since the Edmonton Oilers. No team has ever shot this efficiently ever in hockey history. Like, some of the crooked numbers that this team put up last year were ridiculous, right? It shouldn't be a hot take to say, hey, matching the Edmonton Oilers in goal differential through 30 games is probably not going to happen again. Because I'm not talking about
the 80s Edmonton Oilers.
I'm talking about the Gretzky-Messier copy. Yeah. Like, that's an unreasonable expectation to expect a repeat of that, right? Like, the fat part of the bell curve, what we should expect is that this team has a shot to be better. And even if they're better, may not get results quite as good as we saw last season.
This text comes in from Ryan in Penticton. Drance, loved the column. Surprised EP 40 didn't make it onto the list, though. He's definitely capable of a Hughes-type breakout where he puts to bed any doubt about his ability to show up in big games. I don't have doubt in his ability, but he definitely has the potential to break out and silence any of the doubters remaining in the market slash around the league. That's from Ryan in Penticton. And that's an interesting point, right? Does Pettersson have not just a chance to change how, as Ryan says, the doubters here in Vancouver view him, but a chance to do a similar jump from, you know, where most people probably have him as like a top 20 player in the NHL right now, maybe, to a top 10 player. Like, is that on the table for Elias Pettersson if he has a monster season?
I mean, I think it is. I think with Pettersson, it's more a bounce back than a breakout, which is why I omitted him from consideration, because I didn't want to spend time dwelling on, you know, what we saw last season. Like, the fact is that as you know, far along as mid-February, late February of last season, Pettersson was on pace for 100 points.
Yeah.
You know, the extent to which the end of season cooled perception around him, but also cooled in terms of his production and in terms of his two-way impact. I mean, it was seismic. It was so seismic that, you know, I really struggle with the idea that an injury wasn't at least part of the story, just because you could see it. Like, all this guy who was dominating games and living inside against opposition defenders and putting up wild numbers and helping to support guys like Ilya Mikheyev, right, who I don't think a ton of offensively, just fell off a map. And for me, it's impossible to imagine that that's just like mental. there had to be something physically there. So with Pettersson, it's just like we saw it. Like, first of all, we saw it in 2022-23, and then we saw it for 50 games last year, you know? And then what we saw in the latter 40 games, including the playoffs, was so different, so disappointing, that it's just, it's kind of hard to suggest that, like, hey, just returning to form. Because if he just returns to the form that he had in the first 56 games last season or so, people are going to have a very different conversation about Pettersson. He's probably going to get 95 to 105 points, and it's going to be the way that we've mostly talked about him, with the exception of like two 30 to 40 game stretches over the course of his NHL career to this point. To me, it's almost like not a breakout. It's just kind of a return to form, a bounce back. So that's why he was omitted from the list. And yeah, he could absolutely have one of those seasons, one of those Hughes-like seasons where people are talking about him like the elite player that, you know, I still have always believed that he is.
Introducing Seeker, Canada's new free app for your ears. Dive into live radio, captivating podcasts, the latest news and sports updates all in one place. Whether you're rediscovering music, debating last night's game, or laughing along with your favorite DJs, Seeker has you covered. Plus, there are some of the best prizes in the country up for grabs. It's all here in one easy-to-use app. Download Seeker for free from the App Store or Google Play. Seeker, seek your sounds. Find the radio, podcast, news, and sports you love.
Follow us on social at Sportsnet650 on X, Instagram, and TikTok for the latest sports news and behind-the-scenes views. Sportsnet650 is the official home of the Canucks.
Heck yeah, missed this track.
We are so back. Now we're officially back.
Except I will be honest, I've been so happy all week. Except when that one inbox person suggested that it was because the Canucks are poised to be good. Then that ruined my mood. But now I'm a little bit sad because this is our only Friday show of the year, hopefully, in which we won't do the PDO report.
I know. I was really, because you know how much I love talking to Dimitri. It's the official start of my weekend. Nothing, it's true. Nothing says it's the weekend like me seeing Dimitri. I have a Pavlovian response. I'm like, well, I must be close to the weekend if I'm chatting with Dimitri.
Dimitri is your personal Daniel Craig.
Yes, exactly. Yeah, I'm like, oh, here's Dimitri. It's the weekend. Yay.
Should we draft something even in his absence?
Maybe we should draft something towards the end of the segment here. But Dimitri's taking the week off, but hopefully he'll be back in his regular time slot with us next week. Because, yeah, that was sad. But I'm glad we have knockoff Fleetwood Mac back in the rotation here. Somebody actually texted in asking, is that rejoiner still in the show lineup? Which I think is the first time I've ever seen somebody like texting in specifically asking about the absence of rejoiner music. So there you go. It is still in the show lineup, our knockoff Fleetwood Mac. It's the final segment of Canucks Talk here. Jamie Dodd, Thomas Stranz on Sportsnet 650 live from the Kintech studio.
They did that Amazon series about knockoff Fleetwood Mac.
I don't know what that means.
Daisy Jones and the Seven.
Okay.
You haven't watched it?
No.
Oh, that's a good one for you and the wife this weekend.
There's like, yeah, I'm not going to do that. But
why? why not?
I don't know. I don't watch a lot of TV.
You don't watch a lot of series?
No. There's too much. There's too much to sift through. It's like the paradox of choice. You know what I mean? Where it's like,
so what do you do?
I don't know. I read. I watch sports.
Loser.
I spend time with my kids. I play video games.
You're pathetic. video games, that's cool.
So cool. That's the thing you think is cool?
Yeah. 100%.
There's just too many TV shows. Like, I never even heard of that one.
Are you a sports video game guy?
Sometimes.
You seem like a sports video
game guy. Sometimes. I'm not. I hate playing online, though. I will not do that.
Oh, really?
No.
What about Mario Kart?
No.
Play a lot of Mario Kart online.
No. There was the great, great Twitter follow who mostly writes about college sports, but Roger Sherman, he had a good one about like people my age, like elder millennials, hate online playing games online. And the way he phrased it was like, my beef is solely with the computer. No, nobody else needs to get involved with this. My problem is only with the computer. And that's how I feel. I just want to defeat the computer. No one else needs to come between us. It's just me versus the computer.
I mean, when I used to play a lot of NHL online, and, you know, like be like really protective of my record.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like if I was at a point in my early 20s where like if I'd had a couple drinks, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. I'd like not play because I was like, I can't play. I need to be completely sober, completely dialed when I play. I got into like the top like, you know, 750 worldwide or whatever. Like, and I was so protective of it. It was like my 104 record must be preserved here. And when I was really into it in my early 20s, I got pretty weird. And there was nothing better than making a guy rage quit. And then checking your inbox and they're like, stupid glitcher. It's like, sorry, I'm playing the game.
All you do is cross crease, bro.
Yeah.
No skill.
Now, I will say the like against the grain wrist shot was cheap in that game, but it's like also pretty
easy
to defend.
But also, it's like, yeah, it's like, well, you figured out how to score goals. It's like, yeah, that's the point of the game.
But also, it was really easy to defend. Like, there's one narrow part of the ice, and when I played someone who kept trying to mash that goal, it's like, oh, I'm absolutely going to be able to stop you. This is easy.
Yeah, just don't be mad at you. Be mad at the people in Burnaby who made that game, and drive on up to the mountain and make your voice heard.
Yeah, exactly. Protest. No more glitching.
See, this is I just don't want to be involved in these conversations. It's none of my business. Whatever you guys are talking about, I don't need to know about it. I just need to sit down and beat the computer 25-0 and feel good about myself for a little bit after it. All right, 650-650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line. The Bridge Street Dunbar Lumber and Ladder has moved to Progress Way in Tilbury's Industrial Park. More room, more product, more awesome. Details at dunbarlumber.com. Maybe we'll do some more video game talk in a draft or something towards the end of the show. But I did just want to throw it here. So we talked about the lineup going down, or at least the roster going down to Seattle tonight. And this is the part of the preseason where you start to really try to read the tea leaves about who's playing and who's in what group and all of that. And, you know, so one thing I mentioned earlier was Max Sasson, Sammy Blais, Linus Karlsson, Christian Molanen, all playing in their third straight preseason game. So they'll be 3 of 3. Atu Ratu and Lekkomäki not playing tonight. And of course, those are two of the young players that I think a lot of fans, and rightfully so, expect could have a legitimate chance to make the team. So are we at that stage of the preseason now where playing a lot is almost says something bad about your stock, right? Where it's like you need more chances to try to impress us at this point, whereas guys like Ratu and Lekkomäki, not that it's done, obviously they've got a long way to go and they're going to get more opportunities here, but maybe they've done enough through the first two games where it doesn't feel like, okay, we have to keep putting them out there to try to earn a spot and impress us.
Sorry, I was answering a question. What was that?
It's all good. Okay. The dynamic of if you're playing your third straight game, is that like a good thing for your stock or a bad thing, right? Versus Ratu and Lekkomäki getting rested, whereas some guys are out there playing their third straight game. Is that a case of the guys who have been in all three of these games now, it's almost as a way of the coaching staff saying, like, you need to do more. We're going to give you the opportunity, but we need to see more in a way we don't necessarily feel about Ratu and Lekkomäki through two games so far.
Sure, yeah. I mean, so, again, it differs by the player. You know what I mean? Like, if you're Sammy Blais, getting into the third game is a good thing, especially in conjunction with what Tockett had said about your fitness level, right? Because mm-hmm. It's like partly you're getting an opportunity to play yourself into a higher fitness level over the course of camp, but also you're getting maximum eyeballs from pro scouts and on as you try to earn an NHL contract. So if you're Sammy Blais, being played in your third straight game is like exactly what you want. If you're Ratu or Lekkomäki, you know, especially for Lekkomäki, I think this is it's a little bit more mixed, right? Because I think partly what you're now going to be evaluated on, or explicitly what you're going to be evaluated on here, is how well do you hold up, right, with the rigors of something that's a lot more like a condensed pro week, right, for a guy who's never been through that, right, hasn't been through a full North American professional season. Part of managing that is the 5 games this week, right, the 5 and 7, the you know, the gruesome stretches we see teams sometimes get into, like 9 and 15, right? Like you get these wild stretches over the course of an 82 game season where, mm-hmm. and we talk about it all the time, schedule losses and on, right? How do you hold up, you know, in those rigors? Now, Lekkomäki is not playing tonight, right? But, you know, if he plays 2 this weekend, for example, then that'll be 4 and 6.
Yep.
I mean, that's a lot. That's a haul for that player. You know, I think that's important in terms of evaluation, but I also think it makes your climb to an NHL roster spot, especially for a guy like Lekkomäki, who even if he makes the roster, I think we'd be looking at it as like a 7-game look or a 9-game look, and we'll see what the club thinks. And, you know, this might be a way to start your season as opposed to, you know, a commitment to making you part of the core right now and on, right? Like, this team's going to approach Lekkomäki with patience in mind and long-term development in mind, regardless of how the next week plays out at preseason or at training camp. So, you know, for him, I think it's one of those things where it's a challenge, right? Like a challenge to be overcome, a question to answer, as opposed to something where, you know, you like your chances of making the team as a result of it. So I think it's kind of mixed. If you're Sammy Blais, you want as much action as you can get. If you're Jonathan Lekkomäki, it's an obstacle being placed in front of you.
Right. So, yeah, it's... I mean, look, I'm guilty of just doing it, that we can read too much into it. You know what I mean?
No.
Sometimes. Not that would ever happen.
That doesn't sound like us at all.
I'll also I'll flip the question around that you posed to Allison earlier, right, where you asked her who on the Seattle roster kind of has the most to play for tonight. And considering that, you know, two of the young players gunning for spots, Lekkomäki and Ratu, are not involved in this one, of the players the Canucks are sending to Seattle, who do you think kind of has the most at stake for this one tonight?
Yeah, and I think, like Allison, I'm going to pick a multifaceted answer, right? Like,
sure.
Linus Karlsson jumps off the page to me, along with Archdeep Baines, right? Where it's like, I think both guys have played really well at training camp and in the preseason. Like, Baines had a ton of looks. Linus Karlsson was really good the first game that he played, a little bit less impactful against the Calgary Flames, but he's made skilled plays. He's been and he's looked big along the wall. His skating stride looks improved. Baines looks like he's added a gear to his skating
stride. Definitely looks faster.
His speed has come along, and that's amazing. Like, he looks noticeably improved. It looks like he's added some flash. It looks like he's trying to play his game a little more. He's had opportunities off the rush. I mean, there's been a lot to like there, but he hasn't put one home, right? Karlsson at least made that skill play at the net front, and if you're the Canucks, especially without Dakota Joshua, like, Linus Karlsson's skill level and right-handed shot at the net front on PP2, like, that's a niche right off the bat that you might be looking at him, you know, to fill, and one where he's already made like a dynamic play in the preseason, but it's not enough to make a dynamic play. You need to stack dynamic plays one on top of the other, because you're trying to beat out like five guys, four of whom have one-way NHL contracts and are cinches to be on the roster to get one of those jobs, right? And Karlsson likewise, right? Like, it's not enough to play well. You have to SWAT team style kick the door down.
Yeah.
Like, this is a tough climb for these gentlemen, so they've got a lot to play for. Obviously, you'd point to Blais.
Yes.
As well. All right, Blais, you know, the guy without a contract, so he'd be in this mix. And yeah, that would sort of be my short list there, would be those gentlemen. Those three gentlemen in particular, I think, have they'll have a lot of Canucks eyeballs on them and high stakes in the game tonight.
Yeah, Baines and Karlsson, especially because of how well Ratu and Lekkomäki have played, right? So you're not just trying to beat out an established NHL player for a spot, right? You have to jump over some other young players probably in the pecking order as well to put yourself in a position to do that. So that's a very tall order. And as you said, you know, things are going to come pretty fast and furious here, right? So as much as when training camp opens, and still you can look at it and say, hey, it's a long way till the regular season, there's lots to do, opportunities are also dwindling. Right. Because you look at it, and that game a week from today, if that's a dress rehearsal game and there's not a room for a lot of like fringy guys in that game, then really we're talking about three preseason games potentially for some of these guys to make their case. So every opportunity, especially for players like Baines and Karlsson, looms so large. And then for Sammy Blais, you know, if you've been name checked kind of as, hey, we'd like to see a little more fitness, all of that, you have to at least show that trajectory at this point in the preseason. Nice for Sawyer Mineo to get into a preseason game tonight as well. And I know you mentioned with Vilmer Ulriksson, and, you know, he's still with the team as well. Like, great for him to get a preseason game. And for Sawyer Mineo, I know Rick Dhaliwal all of a sudden is very high on Sawyer Mineo. He was mentioning it on Helfer and Bruff, but for him to stick around this long as a junior player, and now the chance to play against the Seattle Kraken is a nice feather in his cap.
Dhaliwal is very high on Sawyer Mineo.
Yeah.
Okay.
He's been out scouting him.
What's his take?
He's just like, gonna be a player. That's Dhaliwal's take.
He's going to be a player. Maybe. I mean, absolutely, maybe. You know what? Really cool for Sawyer Mineo, who plays for the Seattle Thunderbirds in the WHL, to get an opportunity to play in the NHL barn, right? In the city that he lives in throughout the year. I mean, look, these opportunities matter. The ability to get blooded, as it were, in preseason action. Now, Mineo had the successful camp experience last year where he earned the contract before he got sent down. And then had that offensive breakout season last year for Seattle, although most of it was power play goals, which takes nothing away from him. Like, I think the thing about the Mineo offensive breakout to keep in mind is it's like on a team that lost a ton of NHL talent, right? Guys like Dylan Gunther and Olin Zellwiger, like guys who are good in the NHL right now, left his team. Guys like Tiija Ginla moved to other WHL teams. You know, he was counted on to step into a bigger role, and the offensive production that he managed, the power play goals that he was able to score, like, for me, that's like baseline. You need to be able to produce in that role in the WHL if you're ever going to be even like a third pair defensive defenseman in the NHL, right? Like, Dan Hamhuis was a 76-point defenseman in the dub, right? And never hit 40 points in the NHL. Great career, right? But his value was an offensive once he became an NHL player, which is just this reminder that, you know, the best defensive players in the NHL, they were elite scorers usually at lower levels of hockey. You know, Minio sort of seizing that opportunity speaks to him having an NHL ceiling, having a chance to be a player. But don't look at the production and assume that that means that Sawyer Mineo is going to be like an offensive defenseman or even a like really valuable two-way defenseman at the next level. I still think the upside there, you know, is a little bit lower, right? Like Jet Wu had 66 points in 62 games, right, in his draft plus one season in the Dub. Yep. Like, there's a lot of road for Mineo to run. And ultimately, I think it's the size, the lankiness, the defensive IQ. Like those are the skills that Mineo has that I think are a little bit more NHL level as opposed to like what I'm seeing from him as a puck handler or potential offensive player down the line. He's definitely going to have a shot because of those defensive attributes, and it's going to be interesting to see how they play tonight. Really cool, though, for him to get a preseason game, you know, in the city that he plays WHL hockey. And that's incredible.
Yeah, that's special. Would you expect a round of cuts tomorrow, potentially? Like, I mean, I know they're going in and they have a game tomorrow and then the game Monday as well, right? But they're still carrying a lot of bodies. When would you expect like another flurry of moves and cuts coming for the Canucks here?
Yeah, I mean, look, there's so many games. Like, I would expect after this set of back-to-backs, right? The fact that, like, Oleriksson might get another game, right? You know, but I would expect cuts Sunday, probably. That would make sense to me.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I don't think they'd do like two rounds. Like, why cut guys on game day? Just wait.
Right.
Just wait. Meet with everybody. You know, like a guy like Sawyer Mineo, he might not play back-to-back games. But, you know, you wait for Sunday. Everyone takes a deep breath. You give them the face-to-face meeting. You give them the feedback. You know, that's sort of typically how it works. You announce it afterwards. Mm-hmm. Like, that's... I would expect Sunday we'll probably get another round of cuts. And then by next week, you're going into dress rehearsal mode where you're... you know, really trying to play something that looks a lot more like an NHL lineup.
Well, and Monday then kind of has the feel of like the last chance game, right? So it's like the fringe guys get in on Monday and it's like, all right, show us something to try to stick around at least until Friday.
Yeah. And then maybe there's a couple battles, like the last battles in that sort of final dress rehearsal where you typically ice a pretty close to NHL level lineup. That's what I'd expect. I mean, we've seen, you know, like Aaron Volpatti when he made the team. Do you remember Aaron Volpatti making the team? That was one of the most dramatic ones I can remember.
I thought you were going to ask specifically if I remember Aaron Volpatti. I was like, please. Yes, of course I do.
I assumed you'd... No, it was... man, I can't remember who he punched. But he... Aaron Volpatti, in the last preseason game, one-punched a player. And I can't remember. It was a San Jose Sharks player. In my head, I thought it was Todd Fedoric, but Todd Fedoric was at Canucks camp that year, so I've misremembered it. Arash says it's Brad Winchester. Anyway, Aaron Volpatti had this like massive knockout in the final preseason game of the Canucks season, the first year he cracked the roster with the team. And like the moment he delivered it, it was like, they're not cutting that guy. No chance. The other guy who I remember making like a really sick assault on a roster spot over the course of training camp.
I thought you were going to say a really sick assault on an opposing player.
No. No, on a roster spot. A successfully an assault you capture. Like, I'm using military terminology.
No, I get it.
Was Adam Gaudette.
Yes.
In 2019.
And that was the Sven Bärtschi, right? Where he ended up.
By the way, it's nice to have a front office that doesn't operate like that. Like, especially if you thought Sven Bärtschi wasn't good and you thought Adam Gaudette was ready, that's all the more reason to make sure Adam Gaudette got at least 25 more games in the AHL while you gave Sven Bärtschi 30 games of the softest deployment known to man with the best skilled players you could put him with so that you could see if you could resuscitate the value of that deal. Like, that was wild. That to this day, that was like spectacularly weird the way that played out.
Do we want to do like a micro draft here?
A micro draft. What are we drafting? Know.
Well, like, no, we have 3 minutes left.
Okay, let's draft. I don't know. What do you want to draft quickly? Canberra has an idea?
No, he's telling me to do my job before the end of the show. Yeah. You're, what do you mean, what do I want to draft? That's your job. You're okay. The one I throw to on the spot to come up with a draft idea.
Let's draft wingers. Let's draft Canucks wingers you think are going to be able to break camp with the team. Okay.
Okay.
And, but you can't draft Besser, Garland, Hoglander.
I was going to say, number one pick, Brock Besser.
You can't You can't draft the following: Besser, Garland, Hoglander, DeBrusque, Heinen, Sherwood, obviously Joshua. So those are the guys you can't draft.
Okay. Arash, you want to get in on this? Producer Arash?
Yeah, Claude Giroux, maybe. I don't know. Let's put him in there. He's good.
All right, we'll give you the first pick.
Yeah.
Who do you want to take? Canucks winger to make the team other than the like
exclusive
15 guys that Drancer just listed.
Yeah, that's like so many people that I have to automatically take off my mind. I mean, PDG maybe is probably going to be...
That's a good one.
That's a smart pick.
Off the top of my head.
That is a smart pick. You didn't say Sprong, did you?
Nope.
I'll take Daniel Sprong.
You can take Sprong. So I'm picking next. I'm going to take Lekkerimäki. And I guess I can't take Ratu because he's a center.
All
right, so I'm going to cheat, and I'm going to take Pew Suter because Ratu makes the team, so he lines up as a winger on opening night. Boom! Loophole.
Love cheating. Yep. Love announce.
Big cheater fan.
I love cheating. You made the rules. And then we're like, and I'm going to break them.
Well, I didn't break them. I loopholed it.
You found a loophole. Yep. Okay, so now we're into the real. I guess I'll have to take... Linus Karlsson.
Okay.
Right? That's who else is even... Oh, well, there's Sammy Blais left. I don't want to put words in your mouth, Arash.
But Arash has to make two picks, and then it's coming back to you, Jamie.
Oh, wait, what?
Yeah. And then I'll make an eighth pick, because we're going deep.
Arshdeep Baines.
All right.
To go back
the sixth
back
overall pick. Yep.
And I'm going to pick Christian Wolanin as a winger.
Hey, he's getting opportunities here in preseason. Yep. I'll take Sammy Blais.
Okay. And so now I'm really, scraping the bottom of the barrel here. Can I cheat? Is there another way to cheat that I haven't considered?
I don't know. They're your rules.
Is this a
reaping sewing meme, but it's the next level.
I have another way to cheat. Neil Zaman is a winger. Neil Zaman is a winger. Hey, that was a good pick.
What a fascinating exercise this was.
I think we all learned a lot today.
I think we all learned a lot from that one specifically. I'm sure we'll learn a lot from the Canucks games over the weekend and then going in to Monday. Enjoy the games. Remember, you can hear this one tonight with Batch and Randeep on the call on Sportsnet 650. We will be back on Monday for another week of preseason chatter here. Have a great weekend. It is Canucks Talk, Sportsnet 650.